broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use. No doubt continues now. This, my fellow Americans, is the broadcast for February 25th in the year of our Lord, 2019. This is hour two of two, and our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio. Kurt Crosby's off for his birthday yesterday. Happy birthday to Kurt. And I'm pressing all the wrong buttons, trying to get all the guests and everybody lined up and answer phone calls and run the board and take the show and do the show notes. And man, it's getting crazy. But this is Liberty Roundtable Live, and we do our best so you don't see how crazy it is behind the scenes. You know what I'm talking about? All right, libertyroundtable.com is our website, live and on-demand radio at your fingertips, free. But if you have the heart to help, the Widow's Mite Radio Network would love your donations. Every penny will be used to grow our presence in the media. We've got our buddy listener Ken from Utah on the line, wants to provide a quick update. Hi, Ken.
Hey, good morning. How y'all doing?
Fantastic, sir.
Good. Yeah, I just wanted to let you know that 6 years in the making, new feature film, documentary film, is being premiered this Thursday in Orem, Utah, at the LDS Film Festival. What's really interesting about it is that Stan Ellsworth from American Ride, the Harley Davidson rider guy that's traveled all over the United States and won 7 Emmys doing American history.
Yeah, he's also a radio talk show host, too, by the way, on Loving Liberty Radio, by the way.
Yes, he is. And he's our host of the show. And we have David Barton, Chris Ann Hall, Kate Daly, and Rabbi Daniel Lappin, Timothy Ballard. They're all in the show, and there's a bunch of others. And it is, Sam, you saw a rough cut and took a look for us. What did you think about the video?
I think it is tremendous. The bottom line is, do you believe in God, and do you believe God is involved in our lives, and do you believe in miracles? Is the primary focus of the film. And I'm telling you right now, it is faith promoting, to say the least.
It will be rolling out as soon as this film festival is over. It'll be going to Blu-ray. What's really interesting, Sam, is that we also managed to get permission to attach to the film. So you buy one, you'll get a second film free, which is A More Perfect Union, which is about the Constitutional Convention. It was made for the bicentennial. It's been remastered, and it's in HD. It's going to be fantastic to have that also, along with this faith-promoting show, Miracles in God We Trust.
And I'm telling you, when you see this, it really highlights some of the miracles of America, some of the miracles throughout the world's history, some of the miracles in people's lives. In other words, it's on a personal level, on a family level, on a country level. I mean, it is tremendous, folks.
Yeah, it's been very well received in the reviewers that have been watching, and we're excited to get this show out there and see what we can do to help wake up our young people, especially. You know, we actually went to some universities and started interviewing students, man on the street. And it was amazing how many people say, yeah, I do believe in God. But yet again, how many say, no, he's dead. He doesn't exist, you know, whatever. And it's like, wow. And then they have no concept of history. And that's what this film's all about, is to turn the light on and wake up people to the history. So, miracle.
Now, hold on. Before we let you go, though, Ken, people need to understand, he is a listener of ours, which is wonderful news, but he's also the filmmaker on this movie we're talking about.
Thanks.
Yeah. We need to kind of tell people you're the actual filmmaker.
Yeah, I've been working on this project for 6 years. It's beat me up because the adversarial forces know what I'm working on, and it's made it so hard. But he's lost, and we've won, and praise be to God for that.
So, yes, and this film, how do people get a hold of it? What's the website? How do people learn more? How do people get involved? Because they make great gifts for people, too.
So we'll get back to you later, because this is really just the film festival. But 8 o'clock, Thursday night, February 28th, Orem, Utah, in the Grand Theater, 700-plus seats. We hope to fill it up as much as possible. Come out and join us, and Miracles in God We Trust, 8 p.m.
Is it free to go?
Take care, Sam. Appreciate
it. Wait. Is it free to go?
Oh, no. I'm sorry. You can get the tickets at the door.
Got it.
Or or in advance by ordering online. And I apologize, I don't have that in front.
It's okay, but you need a ticket, folks, is the point. I just want to make sure people get what they need to do. You need a ticket.
$8 a piece. It's how they run the theater, of course. So
how much a piece?
$8.
$8 a piece at 8 p.m. this Thursday. Ken, call me back Thursday, first hour of the show, or second hour, it doesn't matter, and remind us, okay?
You got it. Thank
Godspeed,
you.
Sir. Thank you.
Bless America. Bye-bye.
Amen. There you go, the filmmaker himself. All right, Scott Bradley, welcome to Liberty Roundtable Live, my brother.
Well, good morning to you, too, and I guess it's, what, Kirk's 39th birthday or something like that?
Roger that. He turned 61, sir.
He turned 61.
He's almost as old as you, Scott.
Well, he's got some, you know what, he's never going to catch me.
That's right. You know, age is kind of an interesting thing, by the way. You know, you get a little less bronze, a little more brains as time goes on, don't you?
Well, you know what, I'm still hoping to reach my peak sometime in the future. By the way, I've got a reorder tone in my ear from that last call. It hasn't hung up yet, so...
Yeah, because I'm not pressing all the buttons I'm supposed to be. I'm actually looking at the show notes for the next topic. And anyway, sorry about that.
Okay.
No, that's gone now, right? It's all fixed.
What's that?
I fixed it all for you, right?
Yeah, you're good to go now, my friend.
You know me.
I've done my duty this morning.
All right. There's so much to talk about, so little time to talk about it. Scott Bradley, his goal is to preserve the nation. He's got a collegiate homeschool series and book and more on the same topic. To preserve the nation, his website's freedomsrisingsun.com. Not only does he join us every week on the radio, but he also does his own webinars, their video, and kind of a Q&A forum, and he brings up topics and breaks them down constitutionally and founding father-esque like no other. How are those webinars going, by the way?
Well, I think they're a lot of fun. I mean, you know, it's when I first started them, it was, you know, I kind of envisioned something where people would call in, and, well, they don't actually call in. I got a webinar, and I do it on Facebook, and people do actually come in on phones. But anyway, I take questions from multiple sources, from emails I get, from texts I get, from phone calls I get. You can submit questions during the webinar, on the webinar service. You can type them in, and the questions, of course, people who do Facebook know how to type in things, too. But so there's... It's a multifaceted thing. People from anywhere in the world can get in. I mean, all you got to do is know how to sign in or get on Facebook and everything. But
basically, it's a live, massive video conference with a Q&A from Dr. Scout or Dr. Bradley, and it really lets people ask questions in a variety of ways.
It does, and in fact, my initial thought was that they'd be principles-based, and we always try to do principles-based, as you know, but I thought they'd want to know more about, you know, this or that aspect of the Constitution, and it's kind of evolved into a current events kind of thing, and what do you think?
And let me tell you why, and this is one thing that Liberty Roundtable has been known for as well. What people want is they want to understand the principles, but what they really want to do is apply the principles to their modern days and their modern lives and modern situations. They want a founding father-esque response to what's happening in their world, right?
That is exactly what it's turned into. When a question comes up, say, well, let's look in the Constitution and see what it says, or let's look at the 38th Federalist Paper, or let's look at what James Madison said, when he was in Congress, whatever. And the fact of the matter is that you're exactly right, and people need to be really comfortable with the fact that we don't have to by guess and by golly and kick the dirt clods around and look down and roll our eyes and say, well, I think this or I feel this. No, there's a sound doctrine that was clearly enunciated by the American founding fathers, and they have they've left us a legacy that, because of our unwillingness to review this, we're doomed to repeat some of the problems that they solved a long time ago.
Well, and one of the interesting things is we sometimes believe that they were a bunch of old redneck farmers that don't have a clue of our modern day and our modern wizardry and technology and capabilities. And what you don't understand is the principles hold true regardless of what changes around us on the surface. The principles hold true, Scott, and they always will.
Well, the reason for that is this. this is technology agnostic. Our Constitution did not, it doesn't matter if there's horse and buggy days or if there's space stations and nuclear power plants everywhere. What it addresses is human nature. Human nature's tendency is to accrue and then begin to abuse and hold on to power founders have clearly understood that. I mean, you know, Machiavelli wrote a long time before they did. They had watched the monarchs of Europe. They had observed, even within their own ranks, some of the people within the United States had kind of a pretty high opinion of their opinion. And human nature is to obtain power and then begin to abuse it. And so they divided it and subdivided it. They even subdivided the sources of power so that they could clearly avoid as much as possible, as much as was humanly possible, this tendency of those that we have, you have to delegate some level of authority to those that are supposed to be our trusted representatives.
And they even created checks and balances to those who could tap into those sources of power. I mean, they really went quite far, quite deep.
Well, and again, this was, I think that they had seen, well, they had mentors too, in a sense, Locke and Blackstone, and they had Montesquieu. But by far and away, the largest source of their information came out of the Holy Scriptures. And we could talk at length about how much this idea of the scriptural connection to the United States is. But they had also understood and looked at many of the other philosophers, the Rousseaus, the Jean-Jacques Rousseaus of the day, who were basically the precursor to the modern socialist efforts. And the modern educators looked to Rousseau as the man, if you will, and to W.E.B. Du Bois as the man for racial circumstances, rather than some of those that were far more willing to recognize the humanity of man and our tie to God.
Well, in God we trust is the motto of our nation, and that shows how much the Founding Fathers believed that was central to their mission. Quick pause. I'm going to come back, and I'm going to ask Scott a question, and our content today is going to be about my question, just like his webinars. Hang tight.
Scott Bradley here. Most Americans are painfully aware that the nation is on the wrong track and in dire straits. Unfortunately, most political pundits only nibble around the edges when they claim to address the issues. Even worse, many of the so-called solutions are simply rewarmed servings of what got us into the mess we currently face. And the politicians think we're so gullible and naive that we'll buy their lies that they have reformed and now understand where they led us astray. Unfortunately, the truth of the matter is that they simply wish to continue to hold power. The solution to America's challenges is found in returning to the timeless principles found in the United States Constitution. My book and lecture series will reawaken in Americans an understanding and love of the principles which made this nation the freest, most prosperous, happiest, and most respected nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com and order my book and lectures to begin the restoration of this great nation.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way. But actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
All right, in God we trust was a core understanding of our founding fathers. Don't let anybody lie to you and tell you different. And one of the things we need to understand is division is wonderful if it's for the right purpose. It's horrible if it's for the wrong purpose. So to divide up power and to divide up access to the sources of that power, to divide and subdivide and divide and subdivide was a wonderful thing. That can be done for divide and protection purposes, which is what our founding fathers absolutely did. However, our enemies want to divide and conquer. And what they're doing is dividing us on every fault line of understanding with regards to the Constitution. And what they've literally done is they've taken vague concepts or concepts that are vague to us because we don't study history, not to our founders, by the way. And what they do is they exploit that vagary. Is that a word? That vagueness. And they literally become sources of propaganda. And they divide to destroy. They divide to conquer. And one of the examples of that is this Article 5 convention nonsense. I understand it's in the Constitution. I get it. And I understand that a nuclear option, it could be used. I also understand that if states really want to, they're the ones that created the Union. They can obviously secede. I mean, if they don't have the authority to create or join, how would they have the, well, the fact is, whatever they created, they can jettison. Now, I'm not suggesting they do so. I'm just merely painting the understanding here that, hey, secession and or Article 5 conventions are nuclear, psychotic, crazy options. And even though there's a path for either of those, it doesn't mean it's a wise path, right? And we got to understand that. Well, that's one area of serious exploitation. I reject an Article 5 convention 1,000,000%, Scott. Before we get to my question, let's let you just respond to that real quick.
Well, obviously, there is a very, very highly organized, cleverly disguised, powerfully promoted, highly funded, propagandized effort to rewrite the Constitution. And it's being carried forth by those that they sing to the choir, if you will. In Hawaii, those that want a convention talk about modifying the right to keep and bear arms, canonizing medical care, getting rid of the Electoral College. In Utah, they talk about fiscal responsibility. I mean, at different places, they have different things they sing to. But what will happen is this divergent viewpoint will come to any convention that's held. It will be very agendized. James Madison talked about the heterogeneous cast of characters. That means kind of a mixed bag of characters, if you will.
An enemy group of professional do-gooders that have their own purposes and desire to latch onto that source of power, as we mentioned.
Well, you look at what's happening right now with abortion. Look what Virginia and New York, for example. Those people are absolutely dedicated to the idea of killing unborn babies. You don't think that agenda is not going to be at a convention? And they're worried that some president will appoint some Supreme Court justices that will change this so-called right they have to kill their babies. And so what they want to do is they want to canonize this by putting it in the Constitution. And here's the bottom line, Sam. I'm absolutely convinced after watching this and studying it and speaking about it for decades, they want to govern by convention. And one of the biggest things they'll try and do is make it easier to change the Constitution. They'll change Article 5 so that a couple of whack nuts anywhere can call a convention. They can move forward. There's been over 11,000 amendments proposed in the history of the United States. Now think about that. If each one was a quarter page long, you've got almost 3,000 pages of a Constitution if, in fact, that had been carried forth. And I'm absolutely convinced that regardless of whatever came out of any first convention they held would be a desire to change the ability to more easily, in fact, almost make it they would have a constantly sitting Constitution convention, I'm quite certain. Though basically, it would be like the Politburo resetting the Constitution every time somebody gained political control of that. It's absolutely absurd. Think of a Constitution that's 3,000 pages long, and think about how they would try.
Not only 3,000 pages long, but ever-changing before your very eyes.
Well, think about it. That when the 18th Amendment was passed, a very big mistake. You know, alcohol has destroyed more lives and caused more grief and all this kind of stuff than probably any other drug in all of history. But it does not have a place in the Constitution. And so what they were trying to do was take the big hammer, pound everybody over the head until every square peg fit in a round hole, and said, we have said constitutionally that alcohol cannot be in this country. Well, what they found was mass abandonment of constitutional principle as people I know. Well, most of them are dead now because this all happened back, decades ago. But people I have known in my life that became bootleggers, that became just flagrant violators of it, It was not to be in the Constitution. A Constitution has a far different purpose than being the big hammer. But there are those today that want to use the Constitution as a big hammer. They use it against a guy like me. Well, it's constitutional, so we can do this. And it's like, the Constitution is never designed for that. It is fundamental principles by which the nation operates. And it's not something that's going to say, oh, yea, verily, now abortion is constitutionally protected. Nobody can ever stop it. And all of these murderous people are cheering in the streets, while those of us that mourn and we love children and think God, you know, gave life for a purpose, now we're completely shunted out.
All right, the Constitution is designed, ladies and gentlemen, to provide clarity in the proper role of government and to chain down those who would try to pervert it for their own ends. What do you say to that, Scott?
You're right. I think you're right. I mean, it defines limits and bounds of government. The United States Constitution is literally, it establishes the jurisdiction. And in Federalist 45, Madison talked about basically where that would be exercised, mostly external stuff. And the internal stuff was left to the states. Now, that does not mean the states are allowed to become tyrants.
All right, now let's stop you there. And now we're at my question. So we've led into it perfectly. We reject the con, by the way, folks, for an Article 5 convention or a convention of the states. It will be disaster. But let's move on to my question. Let's treat it a little bit like your webinar series. And here's another divide line. Remember, I told you what they do is they take the good guys who mean well, and they find a fault line, an area where they can become advocates of confusion, and they exploit this, and they get us to divide and conquer and fight over this. Here's the question. Was the Bill of Rights meant to apply to the states? That's the question. Was the Bill of Rights meant to apply to the states? Before I give you any more info, Scott, go ahead, sir.
So initially, I think you're probably going into this program that the Supreme Court just decided, but let's just talk about this fundamentally from the beginning. The right to keep and bear arms, let's take for example, is an individual God-given rights. It was something that was established. The American Founding Fathers just simply went with something that was pre-existing to the Constitution. They didn't create the right to keep and bear arms. And what actually happened was that they were preventing any encroachment by the national government into any of these other areas. And unless they be, you know, say, oh, dang, we forgot. Oh, we forgot this right. The Ninth Amendment says even if we didn't mention a right, it's still ours. Okay, and the Tenth Amendment specifically said the national government does not have power unless it was delegated in this and the rest are retained by the states and the people. As we started to say earlier, the Declaration of Independence says that the purpose of government is to secure God-given rights, you know, and so government, regardless of what level it is to secure God-given rights. Now, what the initial thought of the founders, I'm convinced, it was that they were putting chains, if you will, on the national government. They intended for the state and local governments to be bound by chains that were established by people within their own jurisdictions that were going to kind of nail their feet to the floor in the same way. Like, for example, Utah. Let's take our Utah Constitution. It has a Bill of Rights, if you will, in the Article 1. Now, we've encroached in it horribly, but Article 1 of the Utah Constitution talks about the right to keep and bear arms and the right of speech and religion and all those kind of things. And so the intention was that at every level of jurisdiction, everyone would still hold sacred these things that the Founding Fathers had recognized and canonized, if you will. We've used that term a couple of two or three times this morning, and brought it so that this is the way that good government needs to be operating to secure God-given rights. Well, so what's happened over time, using the 14th Amendment largely, the 14th Amendment is the most litigated amendment in the United States Constitution now. It was written in venom, and if you ever want to read a travesty of tyranny, read how it was quote-unquote ratified.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's say this in the simple answer. The answer is yes, I believe that the Bill of Rights applies to the states. And there's a lot of people saying that it doesn't. They use the fact that it doesn't mention it in the Constitution, and they use the preamble to the Bill of Rights as their guide. But they make a huge mistake. I responded to a guy via email. I'll share what I responded and we'll talk about it.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
President Trump is set to travel Monday afternoon to Vietnam, where he will meet with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un on Wednesday and Thursday. The president says he doesn't want to rush North Korea on the denuclearization issue and that he's happy as long as the North doesn't test any more nukes. The president's son, Donald Trump Jr., on Fox News, talking about the meetings.
Listen, I think he's going to do what he does best. I mean, he's going to negotiate for the American people. I mean, you know, he's made incredible strides and progress in terms of just eliminating some of this nuclear proliferation, the testing that's been going on.
The House will likely vote on a resolution to block President Trump's national emergency declaration at the southern border. Republican Congressman Adam Kinzinger of Illinois, who just got back from his National Guard duty on the border, and he says,
"We saw a lot of drugs. We saw a lot of human trafficking. I've seen it. By the way, I've done three prior border deployments, all under President Obama."
USA Radio News.
Question, do you have a health insurance plan you are not happy with? Well, Bethany and Jason thought they were stuck. Their plan just kept getting more expensive, and Bethany's favorite doctor didn't even take that plan anymore. And then some friends at church told them about MediShare.
With our previous insurance, we were paying $1,200 a month. With MediShare, we now pay around $600 a month.
Yes, they're paying $600 less per month, and that's a pretty typical savings with MediShare. And they actually like MediShare more.
I was able to go back to my original doctor that I absolutely loved, and it's just been an absolutely beautiful thing being a part of MediShare.
Yeah, so they pay a lot less, and they like it more. No wonder MediShare is growing so fast. Find out more. They're super easy to talk to. All you have to do is call 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE, 833-34-BIBLE.
President Trump says he's delaying an increase in tariffs against China. On Twitter, the president says there's been substantial progress on trade talks with China on issues like intellectual property protection, agriculture, and currency. The tariffs were set to go up on March 1st. The annual report on lightning strikes is out, and it shows a decrease to 17 million across America, an 11% drop from a 10-year average. USA Radio Network's John Clemens reports.
The National Lightning Detection Network reports Florida had the most strikes per square mile, followed by Louisiana, Arkansas, Mississippi, and Oklahoma to round out the top five. About 240,000 people are injured by lightning strikes each year, with one estimate of a global death toll of 6,000. The data collected by a company named Vistella reports nearly 2 million fewer lightning strikes in the U.S. in 2018 as compared to a 10-year average. I'm John Clemens.
This is USA Radio News.
Promoting God, family, and country. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Radio.
So the assertion is that the Bill of Rights does not apply to the states, and they point to the fact that it's not mentioned anywhere. They point to the fact that in the preamble to the Bill of Rights, it kind of hints at that, they claim. And then they use this court case to kind of hammer home their point. And I write to this guy. I said, "Hello, sir, I understand what you're saying, but I also understand the court case you refer to. However, I disagree with your view. I know the 10th Amendment Center agrees with your view as well, but I don't." And then I explain what here is my view, which I'll get to in a second. But Scott, in one word or a phrase, does it apply to the states? I say it does.
Well, it does in the sense that these are universal God-given rights. But I think we could get in real danger here if we tried to shoehorn some of the things that are at the national level into the, you know, the state level. So it has to be applied, you know, according to these God-given right things. We've strayed far from where we were originally, and I hate to make such a blanket statement.
Now, I understand, but here's the problem. What they're trying to do is make this assertion, and as a whole, I would say it's not true. It does apply to the states, and I'll explain my view and how in just a second, but this is another divide line. What they're trying to do is say, hey, the Bill of Rights doesn't apply to the states, and then somebody else says, well, yes, it does, and now if you take the totality view, they're both wrong. All right, but here's what I wrote to the guy. I said, we the people have all the power, and we lend that power to government. Authority on loan, if you will. We agree through documents / contracts, and then provide the documented, delegated authority to different governmental spheres. We can't delegate authority to government that we don't have in the first place, by the way. The reason for the different governmental spheres is to use checks and balances to protect so that one person and or one group doesn't gain too much authority over us. Now, with the above in mind, we create a few documents granting authority to different governmental groups to do different things for us. First, the Declaration of Independence. It shows we the people have the authority to get rid of bad or abusive government. That means we have all the power under God, and we are above all governmental groups that we may create or not create at the time. In other words, that's what we said at the Declaration of Independence. Hey, you know what? We're going to dissolve government. We the people have the power, the authority, the ability to do that. We then create states or colonies, if you will, whatever you want to say there. And you know what? We find out they don't work that well together. Why? Well, because they had too much power. And they had too much power. They took too much power in and of themselves. And they destroyed our liberty. And they were working on destroying each other. We then create and agree to the Constitution. We think either group, the state and or the federal government, might take too much authority or power we never intended or delegated. So we create a Bill of Rights to create another check and balance to the system of the proper role of government. Don't tell me they didn't fear the state because they created the federal group because the states were not living within the balanced plan we gave them. In other words, the states had too much power, and the federal government they then created provided much needed clarity and a check on the states. And the idea was, how can we work together? With that in mind, I look at the Bill of Rights this way. Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion, etc., the First Amendment. The above powers were not delegated to the states to violate at will. In fact, quite the opposite. They delegated it on a federal level to understand the states understood clearly that's not in your document. In other words, you don't have authority. Everyone who lives in the several states would have a First Amendment God-given right codified by the Bill of Rights. And you'll never convince me that the Founding Fathers didn't intend this to apply to the states. If they did, then the states could simply negate, violate anything they want. And they could simply reject all connection to the federal authority. So the bottom line is, I submit to you that there's these different spheres, and we the people have delegated proper role of government or authority to these different spheres to work together as checks and balances. Some parts of this are in the federal realm. Other parts of this are in the state realm. Other parts of this are left to the people, respectively. And we need to understand all these separations. But if you say the state has all power to just obliterate the federal government or violate the Bill of Rights or violate the Constitution whenever it wants to because it has its own state constitution, at some point you upend the whole division of powers and authority that we the people granted. Your thoughts, Scott?
Well, obviously, everybody that holds office, you know, you look at the sixth article of the Constitution, and it says you got to take an oath to the United States Constitution. When somebody in the state of Utah does something, for example, let's just use the home state of Utah, they take an oath to the Utah Constitution, too. Wise people recognized the responsibility to further clarify and solidify, if you will. And Article 1 of the Utah Constitution says, you know, we got religious liberty, habeas corpus, right to keep and bear arms, due process, bailable offenses, the idea of excessive bail and fines. And that's where I thought you were going with this thing. The Supreme Court says you can't do this civil asset forfeiture. Trial by jury, rights of accused person, unreasonable searches and seizures, freedom of speech and press. I mean, all of these things are further clarified and solidified in the Utah Constitution. And so what it does is it makes certain that people can't say, oh, no, that's just federal. Utah can do anything they want. The purpose of government is to secure God-given rights. That's what the Declaration, that's kind of a overarching umbrella thing, securing God-given rights. So in your municipality that you live in, those municipalities are supposed to secure God-given rights. And when I talk to legislators and you say, well, what do you guys do? Oh, well, we got a lot of demands. We get money coming in and we got to divide it up and put it into different programs. And it's like, no. You don't understand. Your primary purpose is to secure God-given rights. And if that includes spending money, that's okay. But if you just think that you're a redistribution program, that you're going to take money in and spend it, you're going to feed the goodie box, if you will, for all the people, you're ultimately going to have tyranny. And so there's a complete upside-down deal. And truly, the Bill of Rights recognizes the things that were ours from God. No government created them. They predate, these rights predate everything. And yes, they are individual, and yes, they are to everybody. And so I hope that people are wise enough to recognize they do apply at every level. And so, that's kind of where we ought to take them.
So then I finish and say this. If the 10 amendments do not apply to the states, then the 10th Amendment can't grant any authority to the state.
Well, the 10th Amendment doesn't grant any authority to the
state. That's right. So that's the whole point. The point is the authority is with the people, and we, by contract, give different spheres of government different responsibilities on loan from us. So I say that it does grant authority to the federal level for certain things and the state level for other things, clearly by contract. If it's in neither contract, it's to the people respectively. Hope this helps. In other words, the point is, this isn't a debate about who's in charge, the state or the feds. That's the Hegelian dialectic lie. This is a discussion about we the people are in charge. We have God-given unalienable rights, and then we then give a certain sphere of government to secure those rights. And each government entity, as we divide power, has different responsibilities and authority. They want to make sure that I have my free speech no matter what state I go to. That's how we work together. And a state can't violate that because they say that the Bill of Rights doesn't apply to me.
No, that's correct. But here's part of the problem. Let's go back to your fifth article convention kind of people. I have studied and reviewed and considered, and a vast number of their proposals want to go back to Articles of Confederation type of government. The nation's wheels were falling off in the mid-1780s. What had happened is the improper amount of power and authority and delegation had been given to the national government. It could not function in the world with that. And a lot of these people are trying to take this back to the states. There was a very clear delineation jurisdictionally. The national government does these things and nothing else. The states do the other things.
And hold on. To ensure they don't do more, here's a list of things they ought not do. And clearly, let's document who has what other powers and or ultimate power, right?
Right. I mean, this was clearly delineated in the Bill of Rights. But the fact of the matter is, and I always have to come back to this, some of our 10th Amendment friends think that states can do anything they darn well please because, by golly, the Constitution says if it didn't go to the federal government, the states can do it. No, they can't. They cannot.
It says to the states or to the people respectively, and the people hold ultimate power. The states have a contract, and we got to look in that contract to know what they can and can't do.
Correct.
Hang tight. Scott Bradley with us, ladies and gentlemen. Dr. Scott Bradley. To preserve the nation is his goal. FreedomsRisingSun.com is his website where his webinars are. They're incredible, folks. Hang tight. Next segment in seconds.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24/7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
TalkRight, the conservative app offered by TalkStream Live that caters exclusively to the conservative talk radio community. Here you'll see only talk shows and podcasts from the conservative right, all the big broadcast names and online digital shows in one place. TalkRight makes it easy to find all your favorite conservative talkers with all the upscale features you come to expect from TalkStream Live. Keep up with the fast-paced political world. Download TalkRight today from Google Play or the App Store.
Do we reflect about our future and where we as a culture are moving? Do we keep our trust in our jobs, homes, money, life necessities, investments, stock markets? Do we believe that our 401ks or other retirements will always be there and that the current economic order will recover? Is the economy going to recover and life return to normal? It ain't gonna happen. By a friend of Medjugorje, whether you are poor, middle class, or rich, It Ain't Gonna Happen, a book of astounding revelations about the present economic order and where we are heading. It Ain't Gonna Happen by a friend of Medjugorje. To order, visit Medj.com, spelled M-E-J.com, or call Caritas in the U.S., 205-672-2000, 205-672-2000.
Politicians, bureaucrats, and educrats, and all do-gooders to please obey the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. This is Liberty Roundtable.
Scott Bradley, our guest today, ladies and gentlemen. Let me lay this out redneck style real quick and then have Scott double down and finish the discussion more doctorally, if you will. Redneck is this: hey, man, don't hurt me, don't take my stuff. That's the purpose of government, to make sure that, hey, that happens. And I then live the Ten Commandments. As a self-governing individual, I have my rights given to me by God, and as long as I don't breach them, I don't lose my liberty. So, hey, live the Ten Commandments and live free and self-govern yourself, and government will make sure that you can do that. Okay, that's the redneck style. And then we said, hey, man, we need government because otherwise a greater force will destroy our liberties. And so government was born. And we simply then, by the Declaration of Independence, said, hey, we the people have all the power under God. Not government, and we can get rid of governments if we want to, but really the best plan is to put together a proper role of limited government, replete with its checks and balances. So we said to the federal government, hey, federal government, here's the list of the things you can do, and here's how you're going to do it. And here who has what power to do what, broken out into the three branches. There it is, the Constitution, federal government, you can do all that, and nothing more, nothing less. That's your duty, and that's how you're going to get it done. Thank you very much. Then we got a Bill of Rights and said, listen, let's make sure this is very clear. Governments cannot steal these things from the people. They're God-given rights. We're going to codify them here for clarity in the Bill of Rights, and it applies to all levels of government. And then we said to the states, hey, create your own document, your own contract, your own constitution, and that'll denote what you can do. And anything not codified in those documents is left to the people, period. And we, the people, then need to govern ourselves based on the laws of God. And if we do that, we all live free and happy, and the jurisdictions are separated, and the world's great. When we violate the commandments of God, when people get too interested in power and they manipulate all this, then it becomes so confusing you can't get a handle on it. But I'm here to tell you that I'm convinced that we the people gave certain powers to certain groups in government, divided, clarified, and documented on purpose. The Bill of Rights says federal government, you can't do this. And states, you can't do this either. My Second Amendment right isn't debatable on who can violate it. It's clear that power was given to the federal government to say clearly, hey, nobody can violate this. So it's in the Bill of Rights. It's protecting me, the people. So now you got a document for me protecting my rights. You got a document documenting what the federal government can do, the Constitution, another document what the state can do, etc. And if it's not listed in any of those documents, it's left to the people to live free. And if we live righteously, most of those things will never even be discussed. It's when we violate the commandments of God that all this becomes on the table for tyrants to steal. Scott, is that as redneck but as clear as you can get?
That's a long-winded redneck, Sam. You know, it's interesting, a couple of quick thoughts, and I know we probably got to move on, but when a little French statesman, philosopher, author came to America in the first third of the 1800s, he came to observe America boots on the ground, and he went everywhere he could and observed our country and what made us tick. I mean, America had become an overnight sensation. We had dusted ourselves off and stood up tall and came forward after we got the Constitution. One of the things that Tocqueville was overly impressed with, I guess I might say, is that almost nothing in America was illegal. You didn't have a law for everything. You know, you hear them now, oh, there ought to be a law. He was just utterly amazed, and he reviewed that and considered it, and he came to the conclusion that because Americans are kind of driven by an inner compass, if you will, a belief that they will ultimately face a just God, and therefore they, by nature, keep their actions within the proper bounds that have nothing to do with creating a law. And you know, Utah's legislature is in session now. We'll probably create 500 new laws during this session. You do that for 10 years, that's 50,000 new laws. And we have become a completely tyrannically driven country because of that, and you multiply that across the country. Now, let's go back just for a second and clarify something about the welfare clause. It's in the preamble. It's in Article 1, Section 8. The term welfare is totally different under the founder's definition. It has to do with good government, stable government, predictable government, and that's what they were trying to do, good, a good social contract, if you will, that said, you know what, we'll keep civil disobedience, the government will, we'll keep foreign invasion from happening, we'll prevent debauchery of currency because the you know, if you can't predict what's going to happen with your money, you're afraid to invest and everything. We'll keep all of those things from happening so you can live and become everything under God, what you have the potential of becoming. That is what the welfare clause is about. It's about good and stable and predictable government that allows people to do whatever they wish to do in the cause of liberty that doesn't infringe upon other people. And so we've perverted that to being a dole, a redistribution of wealth. And the American founders clearly did not want that. You look at the definitions they used, and it had to do with good and stable government. And that's what they were trying to do. And good and stable government prevented injustice. It prevented the idea that we could be invaded by a foreign power. It prevented the messing with our currency. I mean, like the Fed does now. Everything that the welfare clause was designed to do today is at risk because we have lost sight of what the welfare clause is about. So that concept of what good government is very limited. And the national government was given only certain powers to carry out within their jurisdiction, and those that want to change the Constitution today to go back to an Articles of Confederation type of government where the states come in and tell the federal government, oh, you can't rule on this, you can't do that. Well, the states are going to take a selfish view on everything. And the founding fathers had discovered, after using the Articles of Confederation for a few years, that there had to be certain things the national government was sovereign in.
So the point is, ladies and gentlemen, it's not a battle between the federal government and the state and say, hey, we got to stop the feds, they're out of control, and the state's your friend, your pal, your buddy, your solution. Ladies and gentlemen, the reality is the checks and balances and the divisions and the by contract granting limited delegated authority is the answer from we the people. And if we don't jealously guard that, we're going to be in serious, serious trouble. To make the point, you got these red flag bills all across the country in all these different states, and confiscation of firearms without due process is what's going on. It goes against the Second, Fourth, and Fifth Amendments and violates the Constitution, ladies and gentlemen. And here's the deal. They're saying, well, the states don't have to obey that Second Amendment. Come on. It doesn't apply to them. That's where they're lying to you, folks. I submit that it does apply. We just need to be careful in understanding how, Scott.
Well, that Second Amendment, that right to keep and bear arms, whatever you call it, I do a thing in a chapter in my book where I review the right to keep and bear arms from the Old Testament times forward, through the Middle Ages, through the colonial period, and everything else like that, and it is a soundly founded principle that existed, pre-existed every king, potentate, parliament or constitution or congress or supreme court, anything.
And it has nothing to do with guns per se.
No, it has to do with your right to defend.
That's right. And it's a God-given, unalienable right of self-defense.
Exactly.
The government has been put on notice that they can't mess with it at any level.
True story.
And I bring that up because people are getting confused on this, and they're running around going, hey, get the feds out of it, the states. I'm sorry, but they can restrict your right to keep and bear arms. It's constitutional. It's fine. It's in fact, it's not a problem with the Bill of Rights either. And I'm telling you, they're lying about this, Scott.
Yeah, well, there's been some early Supreme Court cases, even going back into the 1820s, about discovering that people can have arms, even though, say, South Carolina tried to restrict that to different kinds of pistols or something, you know, and the Supreme Court decision said, and this is right in the founding era. No, no, it's okay. You can't mess with that, you know. So, yeah. Yeah,
but expect this to be the next exploitation, a companion effort along with Article 5 deception, where they're going to basically say, hey, the Bill of Rights don't apply to the states. The states can do what they want to do. And in that, I submit that they are misguided. I submit to you that by contract, we delegate authority to certain spheres or branches or whatever you want to say of government. And in that is all they can do. And we need to understand that just because we gave a certain authority to the feds and a certain authority to the states, the Bill of Rights says neither can touch these. These are the untouchables, if you will. And as long as we live by the commandments of God, they will be untouchable. But as soon as we violate the commandments of God, all's up for grabs and manipulation and intentional confusion, sir.
Okay, so now people can maybe clarify a little bit with this. This idea of saying, you know, the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, where did that originate? Well, it originated with the people. The people had that inherently to begin with. And so when they told, you know, when they said it, they canonized it, if you will, I keep using that term, in the Bill of Rights, they didn't give up their right to keep and bear arms.
They also didn't grant anything. It was nearly a codification.
Yep, exactly. Exactly.
And I'm telling you right now, though, this will be the next area in which conservatives are deceived. Write it down and remember who brought it up first. This is where they're going. They're going to say, hey, the Bill of Rights don't apply to the states at all. The states can be off and running to do all kind of chicanery. And I submit to you that it's a lie.
The states need to be eternally vigilant, too, in protecting. I mean, like, for example, this civil asset forfeiture, which Utah has been way off base on. Utah has embraced wholeheartedly this idea that you can basically, if somebody's even considered to be possibly guilty, or maybe we'll bring charges. You don't have to bring charges. They can seize your assets and take them, and you can never get them back without court action. And the Supreme Court just ruled unanimously you can't do that. You know, that violates the Eighth Amendment. Well, it also violates Utah's Constitution. It also violates something that is held by the people. It is unjust to do something like that. And so
it also violates one of the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not steal, and that applies to government, too.
And covet, too. Every level is violated, but the Supreme Court just unanimously ruled that can't happen. And like I say, Utah has been total violation of the United States Supreme Court and the Bill of Rights, total violation of Article 1 of the Utah Constitution, total violation of God-given rights, total violation of the commandments. But Utah has been determined that it's a really cool source to get revenue for police agencies, and they've been seizing it. And what they'll do oftentimes, they'll seize something worth $10,000, and the person, you know, they've never been charged, they've never been, certainly never been convicted, and they'll say, well, yeah, look, you know, you can go to court, probably get this back. It'll cost you $15,000 to get it back, but we'll do a kind of a consent between us all, and you can have $5,000 of it back. And the person takes the loss because they know it's going to cost them $15,000 to get it back. And the asset isn't worth it. And so that's how the government has been operating. It is a travesty. It is a tyranny. It is theft by government. And I'm certainly glad that this recent Supreme Court decision should have the state of Utah and other states that have been doing this back off.
We hope. But, somebody needs to write a book called Turning Cops into Criminals, Asset Forfeiture, the Greatest Lie the Cops Have Ever Told, right?
Right. That's a great... Why don't you write that, Sam?
Because I can't run the radio program, work a full-time job, raise 8 kids and 4 grandchildren, and do all that I do and write a book at the same time. That's the problem.
That is a problem.
That's why I don't run for office either. But all I'm telling you is that watch for that lie, that deception. They'll try to push this. You watch, and they'll try to divide patriots over this issue. And I'm telling you, we need to be clear in our understanding that we delegate proper authority to government. There are rights, not privileges. We need to live under God's laws. And when we do, and when we jealously guard the authority we gave to each group, will make stable progress for the proper role of government. We don't understand this, and we'll lose our liberties right before our very eyes, folks. Thank you, Scott.
Always good to visit with you. Everybody take care.
There he goes. Scott Bradley, to preserve the nation is his goal, and I'm in on the goal, man. Good idea. And freedomsrisingsun.com is his website. Tremendous, tremendous information there. From a collegiate homeschool curriculum right on through to his incredible webinars. freedomsrisingsun.com. We declare this nation shall endure. God save the Republic of the United States of America.